This is Tips and Tactics and Full Draw Fitness. And you are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast. We launched an updated website at www.archerymaniacs.com. Go there and you will find Archery Maniac Taxidermy. Our taxidermy includes European mounts, hydrographic skull dips, and custom artwork, customizable video packages, packages to fit all your hunt needs, monthly newsletter. The newsletter will include success stories, failure stories, gear reviews, wild game recipes, upcoming episodes in our online series, and upcoming podcasts, and updates to our YouTube online series called Live Life at Full Draw. Alert, alert! Soon to launch our ebooks, Hunt Planner Guide, all the steps you need to plan your next DIY dream hunt, including specific questions, hunt plans, and step-by-step instructions. Keto dehydration. Make your own dehydrated keto meals for your hunting and backpacking adventures. Super tune your bow, beginner's bow tuning guide, and more. Thank you for tuning into the show, and we appreciate you checking out the website. If you are looking to take your backcountry abilities to the level you've always wanted, contact Elevation Fitness Training and see how their personalized program can get you the results you've been waiting for. Mention Archery Maniacs and get 10% off the training package of your choice. Health is a lot more than what we can see on the outside. It's how we fuel ourselves, train, recover, balance life, and manage stress. Nutrition Realign is a holistic approach to health, making sure that you are feeling your best and ready for any adventure. Do you suffer from target panic? Has buck fever affected your shot control at the moment of truth? Learn the science of shot control at ShotIQ.com. Joel Turner's controlled process shooting program will give you the tools to succeed in extreme stress shooting situations. Decide to succeed with ShotIQ.
Now,
let's
get
into
the show.
In this episode of Tips and Tactics, Cale Staton interviews myself about hunting Wyoming and hunting out west and how to do that with the least amount of money and how to be best prepared. This is part one. Be on the lookout next Wednesday for part two. As for the Full Draw Fitness, Stephen and Courtney cover shooting with a mouth tab. I hope that you enjoy the show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, today we have kind of a cool episode. We have our new co-host, Cale Staton, on the other end of the line. He is actually looking at coming. He's from Texas, and he's looking at coming and hunting either Wyoming or Colorado or something like that. And I've just been trying to help him out best I can, and he thought it would be a really beneficial idea, as far as a podcast goes, to do a podcast of him interviewing me, basically helping him figure out which units to apply for and when to apply and how to apply and how to do the research and what kind of gear and all that kind of stuff. So Cale is actually going to interview me in this podcast.
Turn it around on you today.
What's up? What's up?
So how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm good. If there is any background noise, everyone, I excuse it. We're working on getting new internet at the house and it's not there yet. So I am sitting in Starbucks right now. So
that's great.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, you know, everybody that the first time to go hunt out west is kind of intimidating. At least it was for me, especially for somebody that doesn't live in that area. I'm from Texas, and you know, the hunting is completely different, and the way to get out there to get hunting is completely different. And like you said, you know, it's been a process. I've made one trip out west before, but it was a guided hunt, so I really just had to do it I was told. So this time's going to be completely different. I know I am going to be going with you, but still I'm trying to get to the point where I can go out on my own at some point and things like that. So, you know, I think the listeners, a lot of them are going to be in the same position as me. So basically, you know, when you're choosing to go west, you know, what would you start as a big game animal? What may be first animal to go try to be successful on out west?
So if you aren't, you know, if you're not absolutely dead set on coming for an elk hunt or dead set on coming for a mule deer hunt, if you simply just want to get out west and shoot an animal, then I would definitely apply for an antelope license. Wyoming, places that I live, I literally see over 300 antelope a day. I mean, the chances of you coming out here with your bow and trying to shoot an antelope are great. And if something happens and you don't get an antelope, you can shoot one with a rifle. So that's a guaranteed with a rifle, let me tell you what. So that's what I would do. Like I say, if you're not dead set on something else, because I understand the allure of hunting high country mule deer, hunting, you know, screaming elk in September. I completely get that. But if you simply just want to come out west and hunt something, then I would hunt an antelope if I was, you know, someone that just wants to go hunting.
No, that makes sense. You get your feet wet, start learning the area, learn the tag system, the draw system. You know, just get some experience out there with the boots on the ground. That'd be a good way to do it. I agree.
Yeah, boots on the ground is probably the biggest thing that'll make your trip better, is having boots on the ground prior to just going on your hunt.
So, the other thing I struggled with too is, you know, I archery hunt, but, you know, should I go with a bow or should I go with a gun? You know, and my first hunt was a rifle hunt. You know, I like to kill stuff, so I'm not picky. You know, I really, really want to kill an elk with my bow, but, you know, if for a first trip out there, what would you recommend doing with that? So how would you make that decision?
So once again, elk is the only animal in Wyoming that you can't come and hunt with your bow and then it immediately open with rifle and hunt with your rifle. There's a few units in Wyoming that are like that, but there's like one or two, you know, very, very few. Most of the elk licenses, the archery season is in September, and then the rifle season starts October 15th. So you have that three-week gap, basically, you know, 15-day gap that you couldn't hunt anything, no matter what. Some like cow season that might be open or something like that. But now deer and antelope are different. Most deer rifle seasons open October 1st. So you could come and you could hunt, say, the last 4 days of bow season, you know, say September 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th. And then you could stay for three more days or something like that and be able to hunt those days with your rifle. Same with antelope. You could come, and some antelope seasons end in middle of September. So you could bow hunt the last couple days of antelope season, and then rifle season, the last day of archer season is over. The very next day is rifle opener. So with antelope and deer, you could come and you could literally hunt both. You know, Wyoming isn't a state that you have to choose a weapon unless you get a Type 9. Type 9 is archery only, and it's only valid during archery season. So you couldn't, you know, Wyoming also, you can hunt with a bow during rifle season. You just have to wear orange. But if you get a Type 9, it is only during archery season, not, you know, nothing. You couldn't go even during rifle season with your bow. It's only during archery season. So that's what I would do. You know, if you're going to come deer or antelope, because, I mean, spending $400 or $500 on a tag, you're like, man, I want to come back with an animal. So, you know, if you are set on bow hunting, awesome. Go bow hunt, you know, the last 3 or 4 days of the season, and then it's going to be rifle season, and you can tip over into rifle season. And if you haven't shot an animal with your bow and you really want to shoot something with your rifle, then you're legal.
That's awesome. I mean, that's something I don't think people have considered, or I didn't consider.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great option for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess this next question kind of depends on where you live, and how you're wanting to get there, because, you know, when I was deciding which state to hunt, I went with New Mexico because it was within a reasonable about of driving distance from my house. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to fly. I like to have my truck there. So other than driving distance, you know, how would you go about choosing which state to hunt?
So I would first off see which animal that you want to hunt the most. You know, whether it's elk, deer, antelope, those are kind of the big three that everyone comes out west to hunt. Once you figure that out, then I would start looking at drawing odds. You know, there's several states. So if you want to hunt an elk, for instance, there's several states. You just go buy one over the counter. You know, Colorado and Idaho, you just go buy an elk tag over the counter. You're guaranteed to go hunt. You don't have to worry about drawing. You don't have to worry about it. You just decide you're going to go, buy your tag, pick the dates, and go. And that's a big deal, you know, because not knowing whether you're going to draw or not is a real pain in the ass. Same with deer. You know, there's several states that you wouldn't really think of hunting mule deer, but you can buy them basically over the counter, or if you apply, it's 100% draw. So, like, South Dakota, North Dakota, archery. This is archery. Nebraska, you just buy a tag over the counter. Nebraska's pretty cool. You can hunt with a bow the entire state of Nebraska with a bow from September 1st to December 31st.
Oh, wow.
So that's awesome because, you know, if you have a month where you don't have any hunting going on in your own state, well, then you can count on Nebraska. But I would definitely start with the animal you want to hunt, and then I would start, because for whatever reason certain states really appeal to certain people, then I would start looking at the states that appeal to you but also offer really good draw odds, because if you can't draw it, you can't go hunting anyways.
right, so that makes sense.
Yeah, because I mean, think about it, like, everybody and their dog would like to hunt the Arizona Strip, but with like a 0.001% draw odds, it is literally less than once in a lifetime draw odds. Like, I mean, you could have max points and still not draw it your whole life.
Hold on. Right. We're having a little bit of connectivity issues right now. You're cutting out just a little bit.
Oh,
now you're back.
That? Am I back
now? Yeah. So, you know, the big thing too, when trying to, if you're depending on a draw, you know, if you haven't been elk hunting before or big game hunting out west, you probably don't have all the gear you need. So it's kind of hard to start, force yourself to start buying gear throughout the year. What kind of gear if you don't know if you're actually going to go hunt? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of hard to start planning all that. And for a lot of people, you can't just go out and drop, you know, several thousand dollars on gear with the possibility of going on a hunt.
Yeah.
Or at one time. So for myself, I'm spacing it out. You know, I just ordered my pack. You know, I've got camo, you know, things like that. You know, a lot of stuff I already have, but some of the things I don't, I'm spacing it out throughout the year, so I'm not having to drop all that money all at one time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge deterrent, and that's a big topic in itself. People are like, well, if I go hunt out west, I have to get all this gear, and you don't. You know, it's a common misconception. You're just going to wear
yep.
– you can wear the exact same camo that you have for hunting out west or out east, but – you're just not going to wear, like, your super heavy stuff, you know? So if you have, you know, a thinner style of pants, cool, bring that. If you have, like, a sweatshirt, cool, bring that. But your super heavy coat or your coveralls, you're not going to need those when you're hiking up and down in the West. You're not
right.
going to need that kind of stuff. So so don't fall into the trap that people are telling you that you have to go out and buy Sitka gear to hunt the West. You have to go out and buy a super expensive tent and a super expensive sleeping bag and sleeping pad and better shoes and better backpack and all this stuff. You don't have to do all that. You know, if you have a frame pack, I went on a bunch of backpacking trips with a frame pack that cost $80.
Yep.
And
yep.
I packed out an entire half of an elk on one of those. Like, it was miserable because it was so much weight, but the frame pack held up great. It was comfortable, it held up great, everything. So you don't have to go out and spend all the money. In fact, I would recommend not doing that, because if you go out there, hunting out west isn't for everyone. Like, that's cool. If it's not for you, it's not for you. That's just fine. But don't go out and spend all the money until you've gone once or twice and really have realized if you like it and want to continue doing it. Then
right.
Go out and do just like you're talking. You know, maybe 1 year spend some money on a pack, and the next year get a sleeping bag, a good backpacking one, and a good backpacking sleeping pad. You know, but the idea and thought of going out and spending all that money at once it scares people.
Yeah. It's the technical hunting gear that you need that you want or you think you need out west is expensive. It is. A sleeping bag, I guess I'm looking $300 to $600
yep.
for a good sleeping bag, you know, so that's a lot of money. But it is an investment.
Yeah, and for everyone that's listening, though, don't be afraid to reach out to myself or reach out to Kale. Kale has learned a bunch from me, and he already knew a bunch. But if he can't answer it or I can't answer it, I know a ton of people that can answer it. So before you go and buy something that you think, keyword think, you need, shoot us a message, and we might be able to help you realize that you don't need it and save you $500 that you could put towards – the gas to get to your hunt.
Right. For sure. Yep. So that's awesome. That's a good point.
Yeah.
So you picked your state, you picked your animal. How do you know when to apply?
So in every state, it's obviously different. It would be really awesome if all the states would collaborate and they would say the first Tuesday in April is the closing of every single state that you're going to apply for. Like, that would be awesome, but they don't do that. So, and whatever you do, don't go off of the previous year's close date, because like Colorado, for instance, it is the first Tuesday in April. And obviously that day changes compared to the year before. I personally went off last year when I was getting ready to apply for hunting in 2017. I went off previous year dates, and I missed out on several states by one day. So I would recommend either A, getting on their website. I don't like doing that, because I think all game and fish websites are extremely poorly built, and they are super difficult to navigate. Unless you are a resident of that state and you're used to looking at it every single year, they are extremely difficult to navigate. And I don't know why they make it so hard, but they do. So I just pick up the phone. I have Colorado, Utah, Idaho, Nevada, Montana, Wyoming, New Mexico. I have all of the Game and Fish offices saved in my phone. I pick up the phone and I say, hey, when is your guys' draw deadline? And then I write it down. And then I apply.
There you go. I tell you that when you make that phone call, don't be scared, because they're very nice people. Every time I've called, talk to somebody, they've been extremely helpful and nice.
Oh, you cut out there. What did you say?
I said, don't be afraid to make this phone call either, because every time I've called one of these states and talk to the Game and Fish Department, they've been extremely helpful and nice. That not one time have I had anybody make me feel like I asked a stupid question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're there to help. Like, they are. They really are.
They are, and they care, because that's their job. But, a lot of times in customer service, you call somewhere in other industries and you get somebody on the phone that does not want to talk to you, and they make you feel like an idiot. But that's not been my experience calling the Game and Fish at any time I've ever needed something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So... and maybe this next question, I'm thinking too much into things. Maybe I'm not, but a rookie hunter out west, especially if you're going without a guide, you know, weather could be a make or break for you. Mm-hmm. It could be plumb dangerous and deadly. So, a rookie hunter, Would it be something that you need to consider when you're putting in for the applications, if, whether I go early season, mid season, late season? You know, do I try to avoid? I know in mountain states, you know, it's going to get – it can get snow in September where we don't even get snow in January in Texas. So, I mean, yep. Is that something that we even consider, you know, when putting in?
So it depends on, once again, what kind of gear you currently have. You know, I'm not saying go out and buy the top-of-the-line rain gear, but if you already have good rain gear, that obviously opens up your options for hunting. Now, just like you mentioned, I hunted in 2016 and 2017, and both times we woke up, and the one year I woke up and there was probably 14 inches of snow, and this is in September, and last year we were walking into where we were going to hunt, and it was snowing like crazy, and it was barely above freezing. I mean, it was cold. So hunting out west, especially elk or mule deer hunting high country, it can be anything. And you can't, you know, you can't go sooner so that it's warmer. You just can't. The season's not open. So it would be better to just prepare for it. And by preparing, I mean have a good to decent rain set, so rain pants and rain top. I would have some type of gaiters in your pack. Now, gaiters come in all expenses, so don't – you can go out – if you know, like me, I know I'm going to use them every single year, so I got expensive ones. But if you're going once a year and not hunting in it all year like I do – you can get a set of good gaiters for $30 to $50. I mean, you don't have to go and blow a ton of money on it. Same with rain gear. You can get good sets of rain gear. You just want a good enough set so that if you're walking with it on, it doesn't like completely rip and tear, and then you don't have a rain set anymore.
Right.
And then as far as, you know, out west, you dress in layers. So then you would want some sort of insulation layer. Whether it's a good sweatshirt or some sort of like down, you know, there's a ton of companies out there that make great down jackets. You don't have to buy a Sitka one for, you know, I have one because I use it, you know, basically from September all the way until January, I'm using it. So I want something that I know will last. But if you're going once a year, you don't have to have something that is made to last you to use it every single day.
I didn't think you could even kill an elk without wearing Sitka gear.
You know, it would probably, there's a lot of people out there that don't think you could kill an elk without either wearing Sitka gear, Kuyu, First Light. you know, there's, and I've killed a lot of elk in blue jeans.
I'm sure a lot of elk have been killed in blue jeans.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I guess, you know, the point is you can go to somewhere like Walmart and get a nice, synthetic down type puffy jacket for probably $75 to $110, and it'll be light enough and crunched down small enough, and you can use that until it dies. And then when it dies, if you still like it and you want to keep going backcountry bow hunting, then you know you can spend a little bit more money on it, you know. But I would definitely we actually have a gear list online on our website. It's free. Go check it out. It's like 52 points of gear and 12 to 14 day extended nutrition list for in the backcountry. It'd be super helpful for people that are really interested in looking and going there and hunting out west. But I would definitely prepare for it rather than trying to hope around it.
Right. Now that makes a lot more sense than the way I was approaching it in the beginning. You know, that's a much better way to plan for something. You know, early in this question, you were saying how you don't need the coveralls and stuff. Tell you a little funny story about me with my first elk hunt. I'm a whitetail hunter. Wake up the first morning and it's 15 degrees outside. So what did I do? I put every piece of clothes I brought on, everything, because I woke up freezing cold in my sleeping bag that I bought from Walmart that morning. And so we get 200 yards, maybe 300 yards from the tent. And I'm huffing and puffing because we had to go straight up this mountain. And I had to tell the guy to stop. And he's like, what is going on? It's pitch black outside. We're trying to get to the place we spotted the elk the evening before. And I was like, I've got to take some clothes off. So I ended up taking half my clothes off and leaving it right there under a tree, marked it so I knew where to find it. On the hike back, he was laughing at me, so it was something funny I did, but I learned real quick I don't need to dress like that when I'm hiking and moving in those mountains, even if it's 15 degrees outside.
Yeah, it's just a whole different mindset. I mean, it's a whole different mindset, like you're saying, because and now there's times when you're gonna have everything in your pack on and you're gonna be cold out there, but sitting down and putting everything you have on and then getting cold is better than trying to walk with too much stuff on and getting sweaty. Because once you get sweaty, your base layer's wet, and then it's hard to even get warm after that.
Right. That makes sense. All right. So we've figured out where we're applying, which state, which animal, what time of the year. We get drawn. Oh my God! Now what do we do?
all hell is broken loose. You are drawn.
Now we've got 2 months to get ready. What the hell do we do?
You take the backpack that you currently have and put 40 to 80 pounds on it, and spend the next 2 months with that on your back, walking around in circles. That will prepare you better than anything else that you're going to do. But no, seriously, I would, if you have a decent pack, I would put 40 to 80 pounds in it, and 3 times a week, just walk. Even if it's on level ground, that's going to get your entire body used to having that kind of weight. You know, the pressure on your shoulders and the pressure on your spine and the pressure on your hips, and it'll help you get your backpack adjusted correctly and all kinds of stuff like that. Will be super beneficial to anyone that has never packed weight with a backpack. And then practice shooting with 40 pounds. Your backpack for a 3 to 6 day hunt going in will probably be 40 to 60 pounds. It could be lighter, it could be more. It just depends on how good you are at packing, obviously. But put 40, 50 pounds in your backpack and stand out there at 20 to 80 yards or whatever you're comfortable shooting and practice, because it feels completely different shooting with weight in your backpack than it does shooting without it. And out west, you want to extend your range. So if right now your range is 50, go shoot at 60 and just see how you do. It's more of a mental thing than it is an actual performance thing. Like, mentally, you're telling yourself that you can't shoot any farther than 50 when – until you get out to 80, 90, 100 yards, it's not – 50 and 60 isn't that much difference. You know, it really isn't. You just have to go shoot it. You know, put your target out there, walk back to 60, and shoot it.
It is fun shooting far distances with bows.
It really is. It really
is. It's fun.
Is.
I don't think 60 is far enough. I mean, honestly.
No, but what I'm saying is –
No, I know what you're saying. To start at 60, but –
and then go 70.
Put it at 100. It's fun. Just see what you can do. Put a big block target out there. Maybe put a backstop so you don't lose your arrow. Shoot at 100. It is fun. Yeah. And then when you shoot at 60, after you shot at 100, it's going to be a chip shot.
Yeah, it's like night and day difference.
it's crazy.
Yeah.
So it's fun to shoot far distances. And
it
so
is.
It'd be fun practice. And it's a tremendous help, like you said. So you have to practice farther distances.
Yeah,
with broadheads.
With broadheads, exactly. Because, you know, the success bar, if your maximum range is, let's say, 40 yards, the success bar, if your maximum range is 60 yards, is probably – you're probably going to be 30 to 45% more likely to have success if you can shoot that 20 yards farther. With your broadheads. Like, it's insane. I mean, out west is just – it's insane. You know, being able to shoot a little bit farther like that, and it's all – like we're saying, it's fun. It's all mental. You literally just put the target out there and just start flinging arrows and put something behind it so you're not afraid to break your arrows or lose your arrows and just shoot. Go shoot. Have fun. So that'll help you. Looking up stuff that, you know, that will help with nutrition. Because nobody wants to go on a backpack trip and get hungry or be hungry. So that's a big deal right there. So we have a nutrition guide. I have a bunch of podcasts about nutrition. There's a lot of other things out there, like Cameron Haynes has a bow hunting book that talks about his nutrition in the backcountry. Ryan Lampers with Hunt Harvest Health, their podcast, they cover some good nutrition stuff. So there's a lot of people out there talking a lot about nutrition. You can buy Mountain House meals. You can dehydrate your own meals. There's a ton of avenues out there, but you can take way, way too much food. But it's even worse when you don't take enough food because you're spending all this money and effort and time to go on this hunt. If you don't have enough food to even keep you energized on the hunt, you're not going to hunt to your true potential, and you might as well not even have gone.
So, you're not going to enjoy it.
Exactly. You're just going to be miserable the whole time until you shoot the first thing that comes by so you can eat it.
Elk backstraps over an open fire are pretty awesome. Yeah. I've experienced that once.
Right?
So.
Right? Yeah, we did the same thing one time. We shot this elk down in this hell hole, like too many miles from the truck in the middle of like 2.5 foot snow. And we just started eating it before we packed it out. It's like the less we have to pack on our backs, the better. And then being in,
I really don't care what anyone says about physical conditioning.
Hunting out west is always going to be more fun if you're in better shape. There's no way around it. There just isn't. You know, the elevation is higher than most likely where you live. So there's actually a company that makes an elevation mask, and you can put on this elevation mask, and it's got different cartridges for different elevations. And what that does is it basically simulates the thin air and it being difficult to breathe when you're at the elevation that you're going to be hunting. So, you know, something like that could be very helpful. Learning.
They're not expensive.
No,
they're not expensive. I looked them up. They're $15 to $20, I think. I mean, around that price. I mean, they're not expensive.
Nope, they're not. And then learning how to bone out an animal would be huge. Most states, you just need to call your game warden, and that's why we put together a booklet that has all these questions lined out to help people, so that when they call up the game warden, they actually know what the hell to ask them. And it just helps you plan your hunt from A all the way to the following year, because it helps you record it so that the next year if you go hunt there again, you're that much farther ahead. It's going to be a super, super helpful tool. Everybody, just check it out at our website. It's under eBooks. It's going to be like $3 to $5 or $10 or so. It's going to be super cheap. But you just call up the game warden, ask him, hey, what cuts of meat are required to take, and are you allowed to bone the animal out? Chances are they're going to tell you something like both hinds, both fronts, both back straps, both tenderloins, and you're good to go. So learning how to bone out an animal is going to save you a ton of weight, because you don't need to pack out the bones anyways. Like, why the hell would you do that?
Right.
So learning that would be super helpful. And then just doing the actual research on the unit that you're going to be hunting is a must. Learning where you're going to park your truck, where you're going to walk, where the vantage points are, so that you can glass from those. And now, again, this is all outlined in our book that can help you walk through that step by step, so you don't miss something and get on your hunt and be like, son of a bitch, I don't know where the highest point is. I mean, I can see up there. That looks like a high point, but what if I get there and I can't see what I need to see? So our book is going to walk you through all that. So doing the research, you know, figuring out vantage points, places that you want to camp, places that are at obvious water, places that are parking spots for a bunch of other people that you want to stay away from. You know, there's just a ton of research that you can do in that time, along with packing a pack, learning how to bone out an animal, learning nutrition, and shooting farther distances than you ever shot in your life. You know, and obviously when we say shoot at 100, 120 yards at the target, we're not saying shoot an animal that far. Don't be dumb.
Right. You know? Right.
But put your broadheads on and see what they do at that distance and get comfortable, because I guarantee you if you can hit the target at 100, when you walk back up to 60 and 70, it's the target's going to look huge. So do that kind of stuff. So that's a bunch of stuff that you can do kind of in the meantime after you've drawn your tag.
Right. That makes sense.
Thank you guys for tuning into this week's episode of Tips and Tactics. That was part one. Part two will air next Wednesday. I hope that this part one and part two will help you guys be more informed when it comes time for you to come hunt out west. Now, let's check out Full Draw Fitness. That's all for this week's Tips and Tactics segment. I hope you learned something that will help you be better tomorrow than you were today. If there's something that you would like us to specifically cover, head on over to www.archerymaniacs.com and click the Got a Question button, or hit us up on social media, and we'd be happy to cover your question in a Tips and Tactics segment. Now, it's time for Full Draw Fitness, brought to you by Courtney and Steven of Elevation Fitness Training.
Hey everybody, welcome to Full Draw Fitness with Courtney and Steven of Elevation Fitness Training.
We're going to be going over everything from fitness to hunting, archery, and just being comfortable with your bow in the backcountry. So sit tight, get comfortable, and follow us along the journey of Full Draw Fitness. Hey, what's happening, everybody?
We are back.
We're back. Courtney and Steven here for some Full Draw Fitness. And today, I wanted to talk to you about shooting with a mouth tab.
All right.
So for those of you who don't know, Courtney has had a pretty gnarly run of injuries, one being a shoulder. And she had to have a pretty serious shoulder surgery. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, so 8.5 years ago, I discovered I'm an awful bike rider. Not just bad, but awful. I was training for a triathlon and went over the handlebars of my bike and separated my AC and pulled the cartilage from the bone and just kind of mangled up my shoulder, and spent 2 years just rehabbing it stubbornly because I didn't want to do surgery. So I ended up, you know, the first 2 years were really bad, but I got to the place where, you know, I was able to strengthen the shoulder complex together to where it would hold things pretty stable. Not to say that I didn't experience pain with it, but, you know, it was doing okay. But just the constant repetition with archery and being as active as we are, it was really hard to ever think that that was going to be a really long-term, you know, goal, basically. So I decided to quit being so stubborn and go in and have the surgery day after Christmas this year. So I am, 11 weeks post-op right now. Range of motion is getting a lot better. The kind of reoccurring pain is getting a lot better. I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel finally. But my surgeon said that I probably wouldn't be shooting this year. It was going to be an 8 to 12 month recovery. So at our last appointment that I had, I said, okay, well, I'm going to find a way to shoot my bow, because not doing that is really not an option for me. So I went into the Bowtech Pro Shop here in Eugene, Oregon, and those guys were really great about getting me set up. I'm shooting the Realm X, which I chose just because it's got a longer axle to axle, giving me more stability and a longer draw, you know, with having to shorten it up to shoot from basically an inch and a half shorter. So I'm really liking it. I'm only on week and a half right now, but I'll tell you what, it's interesting. It is very weird, you know, to be, you know, drawing a bow with your mouth and essentially releasing. But what I'm finding is that I'm already pretty darn accurate. I'm shooting pretty well. And I've had those moments where, you know, a couple of my groups have been, you know, pretty cattywampus, but for the most part, I'm shooting really well. I'm finding that there's a lot more, a cleaner release and just making the slight movement to, you know, unclench your jaw rather than trying to you know, maneuver a trigger. So it's been a, it's already been a very intriguing week and a half, but it's really fun. And just being able to get out there and shoot my bow again, where before they said that that wasn't an option, feels really good too.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure anybody who knows anything about us or anything about Courtney and her work ethic know that she didn't take any of this news laying down. She did have to lay down for the surgery though, because they said that she had to be put under for it. So, you know, that's one of the few times where she slows down and kind of lets things come to her. But, you know, it's been 11 weeks of, progress, of hard work, dedication, patience, frustration, anger at sometimes. But it's been, you know, a really good opportunity to learn and to grow, to expand, you know, your willingness to, you know, go through a process to expand your mind on options, right?
Absolutely.
Shooting a bow with,
you know,
with your mouth.
And it's funny because I've had a lot of those moments where, you know, I just have to be super grateful because I have the ability to heal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a surgery. It wasn't an amputation. It wasn't, a debilitating condition that keeps me from being able to get back to this. And so any moment that I ever had a pity party was quickly followed by a very humbling realization that, you know, I can take action to do this. It just is going to be in a little different way.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of shooters out there that do this, you know. I don't know the names of all of them, but I know that I'm certainly not the only one that's, you know, pioneering out to do this. And I've had a lot of feedback and a lot of people sending me messages saying, you know, I've got to have the shoulder surgery too, or I've had that, I didn't think about doing it this way, you know, and a lot of people who are wanting some perspective on it. And I'm, you know, no expert by any means in this area, but what I do know for sure is that if you have the desire to do it, you can do it. You just have to take action, make steps forward.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, you know, this road to recovery and rehab basically started day one. You know, they wheeled her in for what was your first surgery,
mm-hmm.
your very first surgery, which is scary, you know, especially as an adult. You know, I say fortunately enough, but my first surgery, I think I was 14, you know, which was a knee scope. And you know, when you're younger, you have the ability to be a little more flexible and just kind of go with the flow, and it's more, I saw it as this exciting new thing. Well, you know, here now we're in our 30s, and I'm in my late 30s, and
and I'm not.
And you know, and we get into this groove and this rhythm of life, and things that interrupt that sometimes. You know, we tend to be very flexible people, but you know, we've got a lot going on. We're not the most important people in the world, but we've got a lot of commitments. We've got two growing boys that move faster than both of us put together. And, you know, to be able to still live daily life, fulfill all of our commitments to, you know, all of our amazing clients and the companies that we help out, you know, and just still walk through the daily rigors of life, it's important to be able to experience a certain amount of stress, which allows us to grow. So, you know, with that being said, Courtney went in an hour and a half or so, something like that. Afterwards, the surgeon comes out and tells me that it went really well. She had a pretty severely damaged labrum that he put back together. He kind of gave us the protocol, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, the reason why I kind of really wanted to focus on that part of it was, this wasn't your typical fractured bone, right? 6 to 8 weeks, you'll be in a cast and you'll get some autographs and it'll be cool. And, you know, it's not a broken wrist. This is a major, you know, stable joint that a lot of what we do and what you enjoy in life depends on. It's mobility,
yeah.
Range of motion, strength, you know, structural stability, all that kind of stuff. So, thinking back to when we had to break the news to you that you weren't going to be able to shoot your bow for up to a year, okay? Then to the point where, you know, Uncle Joel Turner says, hey, no, unacceptable. You're going to be shooting with a freaking mouth tab, and we're going to figure it out. So wrap your mind around it. Tell us about that.
It was a butterfly experience for sure. And I don't have a lot of those kind of moments, but for me, it just, you know, I had considered it briefly before Joel had said that and had mentioned it up at the Portland Sportsman Show, but I just didn't really see it as something that would be as rewarding or as fulfilling. Although, you know, shooting my bow is ultimately what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But I look at these shoots like Total Archery Challenge and Northwest Mountain Challenge and, you know, traveling and doing those kind of things. And I hold myself to an expectation that I didn't know if I would be able to fulfill. And I still might not be able to. But I think more importantly, I had that moment where I realized that it's a step in the right direction, and not taking action doesn't get me any further to that point.
Good, yeah.
So when Joel had said that when we were up there, it kind of was like this light bulb moment where I was just checked out in that area before, because he said, you know, we'll get you shooting with a mouth tab. And I was so excited. I didn't know if I wanted to burst into tears or laugh. And immediately I thought, well, how will I let down?
Yeah.
Like, is this going to be a headbutting bow experience? Or, you know, but like, I went into the pro shop when they set this bow up for me. And I'm not going to lie, when I first drew the bow the first couple times, I was shaking. I was nervous because it was so outside of anything that felt comfortable or natural to me. But again, there's no way of getting through that or experiencing or know if it's going to, you know, be what you want it to be unless you try it. So had to go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. You know, thinking back to that day, I was working my butt off, and I remember it was pouring rain, and I get this text, "I did it!" exclamation point. And I knew exactly what she did, because I knew where she was at. So that was kind of the first big victory.
Well, it was the moment that I went, I can do this. Like, this is definitely this is definitely going to happen.
It's real.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the reason that we wanted to touch on this, that I really wanted to touch on this, was there's, you know, as Courtney was saying, there's always a way. There's, you can figure, you might not be able to fly without an engine or some kind of a parachute or something, you know? So obviously there's a limitation to that, and none of us can breathe underwater. If you can, get a hold of us. We'd love to do a podcast with you. But finding a way to overcome any hurdle, you know, is such a powerful mindset.
Well, we stand in our own way most of the time.
Right, yeah.
You know, even in my, you know, in myself, not even looking at clients or the work that we do with them, we can stand in our own way and make those hurdles because we're unwilling to do something different.
Right.
And that's why I've always said, be stubborn with your goals, right? Be stubborn with the objective, where you want to go, what you want to do, but be flexible with the method of getting there. Because if you're not, you just get to the point where something didn't work out and you go, well, throwing in the towel,
yep.
Slashing the tires, well, can't be done. You know, yeah. So if you can learn to be flexible with that and go, well, it didn't work out this time, but I'm going to find a way around that or another method to get there, you'll be successful.
Yeah. You know, I feel like, you know, we're both very self-driven, motivated people, but I've noticed that I learn daily from an 8 and 11-year-old little boys.
Oh, yeah.
Some days they'll stub their toe and they're willing to give up, and then other days we'll watch Gabe try and try and try and try and try, and he keeps trying and he keeps trying and he keeps trying and he won't stop. And then Brody's the same way. He'll be doing something and he'll be focused so much, and he'll tell himself that he can or he can't do it. And I actually noticed this last week. He was trying to do something and it just wasn't working. And he got up and he walked around and I said, "What are you doing?" And he goes, "I'm thinking of a better way to do it."
Yeah.
And I was like, holy crap, I need to take a note, you know?
Yeah.
And there's always going to be a challenge. There's always going to be a setback. But the setback is only quantified by, what would you say, your opinion, right?
So, it's only quantified by your ability to not work through it.
Right.
That creates the value in it. Either it's a big deal or it's not a big deal.
Sure, yeah. So anyway, we're going to wrap this one up. I think that, you know, there's a couple things to take away from today's podcast, and that is that, one, there's always a way for you to shoot your bow. That's what we do. You know, we love it. We're hunters, we're athletes, you know, we're archers. And when it comes down to it, there's always going to be a way. And even though Courtney, from, you know, medical professionals who obviously don't shoot archery, was told that you're not going to be doing that. Well, you know, we found a safe, at the same time, it's a safe way to do it, right? It's not like you're pulling some ridiculous weight. You have a solid education background and knowledge of your shoulder, your neck, and how all that stuff works. And we have one of the best pro staffs around, you know, in the Bowtech pro staff, pro shops that can help set you up, set the bow up. You know, not to mention all the tutelage from Joel and his never-ending encouragement, yeah. Who actually now is so joined the dark side.
He called me the day, so we were talking the day before about my setup and how everything was going.
Yep.
And he called me the next day and he said, well, you're not going to be the only one shooting with a mouth tab. And sure enough, next day, day after his injury, he tore his bicep. A day after that, he was out on the course shooting a tournament.
Crazy.
So it's pretty, I mean, nobody's outside of it. You know, anything can happen to anybody. There's people that have to learn to shoot with a mouth tab and switch arms.
Right.
You know,
Gosh,
so
it's crazy.
Anybody can do it. It's definitely not outside your abilities. If you have questions on it, again, I'm not an expert, but I'd love to chat about it with you. It's super fun. You know, one of the most common questions I'm getting is, well, outside of how much am I drawing, which is only 41 pounds, nothing crazy, is, does it hurt your teeth? And no, it doesn't hurt your teeth. If it hurts your teeth, you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
So if you guys have questions on it, feel free to reach out. You can find us at elevationfitnesstraining.com, or you can send us a message on Instagram. We're at Elevation Fitness Training on there as well.
Yep. You know, and if any of you currently use a mouth tab or know anybody that's used a mouth tab for a while, chime in, send us a message at Her Outdoor Journey Instagram, HuntFit_08 Instagram, or Facebook. And let us know. You know, we would love any feedback. She's going to be doing this for a while, so I think that any kind of knowledge, input, feedback, suggestions, funny jokes, anything like that.
Heck yeah, we're hunters, and, you know, more than any other time, we have to stand together and make sure that, you know, we support each other. And doesn't matter what team you're on or what you're doing or, you know, what you shoot or anything like that, we've just got to stand united and be one happy family.
That's right. Absolutely. All right. Well, I think that about wraps up all my questions. Anything to add? Okay.
No.
Shoot them straight. Work hard, eat well. And even if you have to, you know, bite onto a dog collar that's attached to your bowstring, get it done. All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys soon.
Thank you for tuning in to the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously, though, I really appreciate your ear. And it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, 1-star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lambers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.